I'm Joe Biden, the senator from Delaware, and I approve this message.
I know how to say the name.
Lincoln Riley. Say your name, Mr. President.
Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed.
Well, shoot. And now from Times Square, it's that damage.
Somewhere in the bowels of the city that never sleeps.
Kevin McCullough, radio host with Salem Media.
Is a man also not sleeping.
Syndicated radio talk show host Kevin McCullough.
And that guy would like a word with you.
Many of you know him from as Nostradamus.
Of course that Kevin show is going to be great. The only thing that could be greater, of course, would be that Donald show. But we don't have that, so we have that Kevin show.
Featuring the music of Dick Tunney and the Dream in Color Orchestra. Still to come, sketch comedy from John B. Griff. Gary Sheffield takes us to the motorhome prophecy. And back in the spotlight, Torrin Wells and David Crowder. And now, from Times Square, where a person says to someone wearing a military jacket, "Thank you for your service." To which the jacketed person replies, "I didn't serve. This is Yves Saint Laurent, baby. Here's Pat Summit."
Yeah, Dave, I don't know how they got those two confused. That's not even close. Here's the news.
For Assignment Desk Weekend, I'm Kevin McCullough. Fresh off his stem-winding speech, the Shout at the Union address this week, President Biden, seen here asking a female reporter, "Why not?" when she declined to accept his offer to sniff her hair. The president seems to have rankled fellow Democrats by using the word illegal to describe Lincoln Riley's killer. The preferred term that Democratic elected officials would like to use is new voters with $10,000 Visa cards in their pocket. The mother of Lincoln Riley blasted the president for mispronouncing her daughter's name. He frequently, throughout the speech, referred to her as Lincoln Riley instead of Lincoln. "It was pathetic," said the mom. Assignment Desk Weekend fully understands, and we stand in solidarity with Lincoln's family. And if President Biden is committed to improving his communication abilities, we have a suggestion. He might also like to, and we're just, you know, eyeballing this here, he might want to, at his campaign stops, stop referring to his sister as his wife and his wife as his sister. Just a suggestion. For President Biden, he had one more issue to face before the week was out, a challenge from his November 5th opponent, former President Donald Trump, who said he would debate the current president anytime, any day, anywhere. In an odd twist, the current president insisted upon a single condition before he would agree to the debate. What was that condition? That he be allowed to sniff Melania Trump's hair prior to taking the stage. Correction. Assignment Desk Weekend apologizes. We need to make an important correction. It was not the former First Lady's hair, but rather 45's daughter Ivanka, whose follicles the president would like to smell. After he made the request, he was seen wandering the halls of the White House going, "It's that daughter thing." Weirdo. In sports news, the Manasquin High School boys basketball team in New Jersey is taking their loss to Camden High School into court, with clear evidence that the Jersey Shore school had from dozens of camera phones in attendance. They hit the winning shot before time ran out. That didn't, however, stop officials from calling the game in Camden's favor. When asked why they did this, the officials responded that the Camden players had actually made threats against them, not with violence, but rather they had threatened to potentially show up at the officials' homes, replaying President Biden's shot at the union address, a la John Cusack from Say Anything, on a boombox. And finally, the president's exhibit at Disney World has unveiled the newest addition to its animatronic masterpiece. Take a look.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the... You know the thing.
Simon Desk Weekend thinks that might have been the speech that President Biden should have given instead of shouting at us for 90 minutes on Thursday night. For a Simon Desk Weekend, I'm Kevin McCullough.
First time this weekend. Yeah, I'm just going to go to Bass Pro Shops and pick up a couple things.
This one has 5 days guaranteed ice retention, and it also says it's tested bear proof. Yeah, the kids will just have Capri Suns and like Lunchables, but we'll need a cooler like this.
Do you guys have these in 10 and a half?
You think we need our own firewood? Okay, that's a little disrespectful. I will chop down the wood myself, which, you know what, that reminds me, we need an axe.
You want to go regular bow and arrow or crossbow?
Yeah. You think we can go camping without a compass? Good luck finding your way home. Okay, this fishing pole says up to 900 pounds. I'll probably need... Have you seen River Monsters? I'll need this. Do you honestly think we need a tent? I'm not sure. Bear Grylls hollowed out an elk one time and slept in its rib cage. I'm just saying.
Oh, you don't think a slingshot is necessary? Well, tell that to David when he met Goliath, okay?
Rechargeable 12-volt battery, perfect for your game feeders and ice fishing sonars. And also for the kids' iPads. We'll need one of these. Tackle box. I'll need this. This is perfect.
I wish my son could tackle someone on the football field and get a scholarship so we wouldn't have to go camping for vacation, but here we are.
Oh, no, I'm getting this. I mean, we need to protect ourselves. We have to get some... We'll get a gun.
This one looks... Oh, this it's a toy gun?
Okay.
Listen, I'm just worried that this is the wrong color camo for the region, okay? It's different for... The animals are going to see us.
Okay, we're probably going to see one of these this weekend. If you come in contact with a grizzly bear, you got to make eye contact with it. Show dominance. I learned that in Man vs. Wild. We're going to be in the Smoky Mountains, okay? That's called elevation. All right, do we need oxygen? Let's ask. Water filtration. Okay, listen, in case we need to convert our urine into drinking water, you never know.
Pre-cut vacuum bags.
No, we need it. If I shoot a deer, how are we going to preserve the meat? Thank you. No, not warm enough. It only goes down to negative 40 degrees. You never know what the weather's going to be in Gatlinburg, okay? We got to be careful. Have you seen Into the Wild? Okay, well, I think this place is similar, okay? It's called KOA. No, we need rope. Have you never been camping? We tie the food and hang it up into a tree so bears can't get it, obviously.
Sunflower seeds, we cannot have these, okay? What are you going to do with the shells? Spit them on the ground? We can't have wild animals tracking us.
Oh, I bet you haven't seen The Revenant. Okay, well, I have. And Leo DiCaprio could have used a fire starter, all right? I'm getting two of them.
Okay, this campsite we are staying at this weekend is literally 40 miles from the nearest town, all right? And we're going to drive about 39 and a half of it out there, and then we're going to... But we got to walk a little bit of a ways.
Oh, look, catfish bait. Yeah, I didn't know they had that here. I thought it was only on my ex-girlfriend's Tinder profile, so...
To transport the groceries to the campsite, this would be... Oh, that's for the... That's just for the store? Okay.
Oh, yeah, we'll probably... Yeah, if my wife starts to grill, we'll probably need this, so...
Oh, this is for the... No, that's for the store. Okay.
We need a jerky blaster. No, it says it only holds up to 900 pounds. This is not going to work. No, let's get a hydro flask in case we see a dehydrated white girl that needs to be resuscitated.
I really don't think we need one of these commercial first aid kits. I can stitch up a wound with fishing line. We'll be fine.
Give me that. We are not taking this with... S'mores. No, okay? We're having venison for dinner and fish for breakfast.
We need some worms for bait, okay? No, I got them. They're right here. These are... Okay, maybe. Okay, look, we have a chopping axe and we have a throwing axe. We get both? No, you're right. No, you wear like a camo and then you wear orange because you don't want them to see you, but then you want them to see you. I'm not sure how it works, honestly, but let's go with both. North face. No, I need this, you know, because we'll be staying on the north face of the Appalachian Mountains. Okay, this is an immersive camping experience, all right? We do not need toilet paper. Use a leaf. No, I'm going to get a gun because I'm going to hunt for all of our food this weekend. But just in case I don't shoot anything, there is a Cracker Barrel on the same exit. So.
Ready or not, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Times Square. Kevin McCullough, very glad to have you with us. Well, she's no mystery around here. She's been one of our more oft-repeated guests. She's actually been with us, I think, a total of three times in the first year plus that Kevin show has been on the air, which is pretty, that's a high frequency. Most of the guests have just been on once. Just a handful have been on twice. But the reason I've invited her back is that she has penned what has to have been a very emotional telling of her life story. And little did I know what that life entailed until I began to get some wind of motorhome prophecies. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and welcome back Carrie Sheffield. Hello, lady.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you for having me. And of course, I love coming on your show and I'm honored to be here today.
Well, we're honored to have you back tonight. People that have seen you in the past, we've talked about women in the electoral process. We've talked about, you know, DEI and CRT and gender theory. And we've talked about marriage and the economy of what has happened to that institute. We've talked about a lot of other things. Tonight, we're going to talk about you. Your book is out. You're holding one of the first copies printed yet today in your hands right now. What was the precipice, I mean, the premise, rather, for telling this story? And the title, even, it kind of, you know, it draws you in right away. There's a mystery here. What is Motorhome Prophecies?
Yeah, so the title Motorhome Prophecies is because of my childhood. I spent large portions of it living in a motorhome with my seven biological siblings and my parents. So it was 10 people living in a motorhome, which just the physics of that is quite uncomfortable. But, you know, some people say, and living off the grid, that can be charming. There can be charms to motorhome life, but this was done in a very abusive way. And I wrote the book because I want to encourage people who are either in abusive situations or recovering from abusive situations to get some hope. And then also for people who maybe they weren't abused to just have empathy and understanding and maybe provide support for people who are going through suffering. So basically my father is, well, he's going to be 86 and he has very bad Alzheimer's. So he's not really active anymore, but growing up, he said, I am a prophet. I will be president someday. Satan himself has reassigned lesser demons in order to personally torment our family. So it was just a lot of megalomania. And he was actually excommunicated from the official Mormon church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the LDS Church. But it wasn't until 2013. I think he should have been excommunicated much earlier because he, you know, he was physically abusive. He was emotionally and spiritually just very abusive. He said that the kids were, that we were satanic, that we were possessed, and that he was our salvation. And eventually two of my brothers developed schizophrenia and one of them groped me and tried to rape me when I was 17. Mm. And the other one accused me of trying to seduce him to have sex. And it was just such a toxic environment, not safe, and not being protected by my own dad, and also being told that I was satanic and that I just, you know, deserved everything because I was a slut. And so hearing those stories from your own dad doesn't really build self-confidence. And eventually I told him, I don't believe you're a prophet. And I want to go away to college. And I have four older brothers. So I was fifth in the birth order, but the first girl, and I was the first to leave. And when I told him I was going to leave, he raised his hand to the square and he said, I prophesy in the name of Jesus, you'll be raped and murdered if you leave. And at that moment, I had to make a decision. Am I going to choose more abuse, but at least something I know, or am I going to choose freedom and uncertainty? And I chose freedom, and I'm very glad I did, but it was not easy. I was disowned. My dad said my blood changed. I was no longer his daughter. I was not allowed home all through college. In some ways, it was good quarantine because I was away from the crazy, but it's still your own family. I was photoshopped out of family photos. I had to get declared legally estranged from them in order to get money to pay for my college. And so, you know, having been just, you know, raised in like a third world condition, you know, my mother gave birth when our family was living in a tent. Like, we didn't even have a motorhome at that time. It was weird to come out of a feral cat situation and how to, and try to learn the nuances of college and work. And
I want to pause you there, because the Carrie Sheffield that I know, that I have had a media and colleagueship with for, I don't know, 10, 15 years here, I would have never have guessed that any of that was in your background. I mean, you're a Harvard graduate. You worked on Wall Street. You've had such success on so many levels. Your story has to be a point of inspiration for people that are going through what you've been through, and certainly for the many more that have been through less on some level.
Well, that's my hope. And yeah, like I think, well, then here was the dark side of pushing. So yes, I got a full tuition scholarship to Harvard. This is, I call it my anti-resume. So yes, there's okay. The resume of like, yeah, Harvard master's, full tuition scholarship, check. Getting to work at Goldman Sachs, working at Moody's Investor Service on Wall Street, check. Getting to work in media, going on all these big talk shows like Fox News Prime Time and MSNBC and Bill Maher Show, reaching millions of people, getting millions of impact on social media, check. Like, that's all the resume stuff. But unfortunately, because I had not processed the trauma and the anger that I felt deep rage toward my father.
Sure.
And it was actually motivating my achievement, because I would tell myself, oh, I'm getting raped and murdered. How about I get a full tuition scholarship to Harvard? How about I do this? Like, I'm leaving my dad in the dust with each achievement. This is not a healthy motivation. And eventually it all collapsed. And I was hospitalized with really, really bad fibromyalgia in 2019, multiple times. And that was kind of a wake up call of like, you need to forgive your dad. This is not okay. So in some ways, I'm kind of like an anti-hero. So yes, people say I'm inspiring, but it's more like I tried a lot of other really horrible coping mechanisms. And that's my anti-resume. The book is an anti-resume book.
Well, it's you've got a story to tell, because eventually, even though you left any form of faith, you eventually came back and are now rooted in the Christian faith. And you have talked openly about this. You've spoken with me about it off air at various times. And I'm encouraged that what some people would say the enemy perceived for evil, you have allowed God to do something good with it in your life and heart. But friends, those of you watching, I want you to go get the Motorhome Prophecies. It's available now. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any place you get your books. Motorhome Prophecies by Carrie Sheffield. You know her work from the Independent Women's Forum and other writings that she's had for the New York Post and other outlets. But she's fighting the good fight, and she's really concerned about helping people, I would guess, especially women, to find what God has for them and making sure that they're on a path that that He intends for good. We've got a lot to yet get to with Carrie. Stay with us. It's Kevin McCullough. It's live from Times Square.
Stick around for more of That Kevin next. That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough. Kevin McCullough.
From Times Square, Kevin McCullough, glad to have you with us. Yet to come, we're still going to give away one of these beautiful coffee mugs. That Kevin Show, it's your fun way to spend your weekend. But we're talking about something quite sobering, and that is the story of our very good friend, Carrie Sheffield, who is back with us. And Carrie, I just love your heart. I love the way you're telling this story. I love the way that you're allowing kind of your pain and what you've been through and God to kind of work through you. And I just hope and pray that a lot of people are blessed by your efforts here. I want to turn to the next step of your spiritual journey, because that I feel like is probably one of the most important things that you did discover in this wild path that you've been through. What caused you to begin to reinvestigate God's existence, and why was it Christianity that you came home to?
Yeah, well, I have a whole chapter in the book about different faiths that I explore. I tried a little bit of everything. You know, I lived in Israel. I thought about converting to Judaism, but a Jewish friend put it this way. He said, Carrie, look, thinking about it, and I was agnostic at the time, and I told myself it would have been more for cultural reasons anyway, and I would have done it through the liberal reform Jewish process anyway, and which meant that the conservative and the Orthodox Jews would never have viewed me as Jewish if I hadn't gone through with them, but I didn't want to. So, but my friend said, think about it this way, like you will be replacing one small persecuted sect of Mormonism for another one with 5,000 more years of history. Is that really what you want? Mm. So it was interesting. And then I traveled to Asia. I spent overnight in a Buddhist temple in Korea up in the mountains. Spent time in some Muslim countries in Egypt and Qatar and Morocco and Turkey and Jordan, and just studied Islam and studied the principles of Islam. And it was around that time, I mean, as an agnostic, I thought of religion as really just a sociological construct, something that humans created to find meaning and purpose, but it wasn't for me. And I, as a conservative, I called myself a secular conservative. I appreciated the policies that were associated in the U.S. and the West with Judeo-Christian values. So I saw the value in religion. I wasn't hostile, at least to the practice of it from a community standpoint, again, like a human construct. But the whole idea of God seems so foreign to me because...
You're still being very objective about it, though. It's out here. It's not for me in here.
Exactly. And inside, for me, the idea of God was God either doesn't exist, or he's totally apathetic about me, or he overtly hates me because he put me in this family where now three of my siblings have attempted suicide. I'm fantasizing about suicide periodically because of my inability and my denial about the trauma that I hadn't processed and my unforgiveness. So It's like God hates me or doesn't exist. And so I was agnostic because why would I believe in someone or something that hates me so much? And so I had tried all these things. There's a really great book by Tim Keller called Counterfeit Gods that really crystallizes what I did, which is not me specifically, but each chapter is a false counterfeit God that people use in place of God. We worship the created instead of the creator, and that creates all kinds of sadness and missed priorities. And whether it's money, power, sex, you name it, we worship it usually because it's good. But then we take it too far. And so for me, I tried all these replacements. I tried my career, and then new management came on and a bunch of the old people, we got laid off. Well, I became suicidal because I had wrapped up my purpose and my worth in my career. Tried other things, tried relationships and dating, and just ended up dating abusive men. One who was a drug addict behind my back, another who was an alcoholic behind my back, men who were cheating on me. And it was because I accepted it because I was so accustomed to abuse that I normalized this low grade, just toxicness because I didn't believe that there was anything better. But again, that's a false idol. And eventually I thought I had settled on a God that wouldn't fail me. And that was the God of politics. And
Oh,
yes, we're laughing.
Sister, the pain there. That's
yes. the pain, but that was actually the catalyst. So I actually say it was Donald Trump and science were the two forces that brought me to Christianity. Donald Trump, because at the time I was very much an establishment conservative Republican agnostic. And here comes this guy. Politics became my religion.
Her brand new book, and I believe it's going to help a lot of people, Motorhome Prophecies, is now available. Please go check it out. Kevin McCullough coming right back from Times Square. Stay here.
Stick around for more of That Kevin next. That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough.
They go fast when you're hearing a story this compelling. Carrie Sheffield, my very good friend, and someone who is a friend to our movement, to things that we want to see accomplished. She actually helps shape some of the ways that those things get done. But your book, Motorhome Prophecies, it is a compelling story of a true life that has been through, in some ways, I kind of feel like you're Solomon. I've seen everything. I've done everything. I've been everywhere. I've met everybody. And it's all vanity. None of it satisfies. But you found yourself in 2016, kind of at the apex of your crossroads. And here's this guy, Donald Trump. And as an establishment Republican, I didn't understand him. A lot of people didn't understand him. But something happened. That's where you left off before we went to the last break. What was it?
Yeah, well, I realized that I was putting religion in a place where it didn't belong, that I couldn't worship Donald Trump as my religion or my source of meaning or my Messiah type figure because I didn't believe that he was conservative. And this is, 2015, 16. We don't know anything about him. He donated to his opponent, Hillary Clinton, and he just seemed like he was saying whatever people wanted to hear versus actually going to have a track record of conservative policy. So I was very skeptical and just I couldn't get on board and sell something that I didn't truly believe in. And so that's when I realized I need a timeout from my my religion, which is
your liturgy.
Yes, exactly. Perfect. And I needed something else. And so that's when I started to go to church, study Christianity. And around that same time, also, I studied some metaphysics. A friend brought a book that had been co-authored by a PhD physicist from MIT. And it just explained the rationality, how it's so unlikely that the earth is the way it is just by random chance. Mathematically and statistically speaking, it takes more faith to be an atheist than to believe in someone who created this infinitesimally complex world. It's just basically impossible for it to be by chance. And just understanding the science and the metaphysics that I'd never really grappled with it. And then also just the evidence about Christ and the symbolism and the prophecies, if you will, the actual things that were coming true or that that had actually occurred that were scientific and historical facts. It was just like discovering buried treasure. And specifically with Christianity, to believe in God based on science, and then for Christianity specifically, it really gave me that sense of understanding and purpose and also just like, why is the world the way it is? I still don't understand, and I don't know if I ever will. I don't even think I can because my human brain, I don't think I can process it, but to have, God come down and suffer and be one of us. That's not something that, in the LDS culture, it's actually not that way. It's God is the actual biological son of a biological father. So it is actually like at the time it really upset me because I'm like, he literally had to murder his son to satisfy himself. That I found that really upsetting because they don't have the Trinity and the Trinitarian understanding of Christ makes more sense to me because it's God himself coming down and offering a sacrifice.
Yeah.
And taking on and understanding this experience. I still don't understand why. Like, if I was designing Earth, I wouldn't have suffering. I wouldn't have malaria. I wouldn't have child rape. I wouldn't have my brothers be schizophrenic. I went through survivor's guilt. Like, when I got my Harvard master's, I was like, God, like, why do I get to travel the world? You know, I had this bucket list to visit every continent before I turned 30. I turned 30 in Australia. It was my last continent. I went to Antarctica when I was 29. And then right after, went to Australia. So I got all of them. Like, why do I get to have wonderful memories and do things that I'm proud of while my brothers are suffering? I wouldn't design the world that way. I wouldn't. So I still don't understand. But all I do know is that the more time I spend spinning my wheels, being angry at God, being angry at my dad, my life suffers. So the life of surrender is also the Christian life that I found very appealing as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. There's so much that you've unpacked for yourself, and it's obvious because you're just overflowing with a narrative about what this has meant to you. And that's inspiring in and of itself. Final couple of minutes here, though. You've obviously written the book. You want to help other people. What's the main takeaway, or maybe two things that you would really like every person that comes into contact with it to understand?
Yeah. So I think of the book as two audiences. There's the believer and the non-believer. And for the believer, my goal in writing it is especially for believers, you know, I think sometimes because in general, again, speaking very broadly, generally speaking, religious people and Christians are happier. And that's just a mathematical.
That's been proven through studies.
Scientifically proven. You are far less likely to die by depression, suicide, be depressed, alcohol overdose, drug overdose. Far less likely to have all of that if you are religious. Again, it's not perfect, just a very broad stroke, but a very true. And so sometimes, because religious people are happier and less depressed, it's actually hard for them to have empathy. So sometimes I pray, Lord, give me empathy for people with no empathy. So I wrote the book for Christians and conservatives sometimes, who can be very judgmental of people who have sinned. And I've sinned a lot. The book talks about some of my just ridiculous, sinful choices that I should regret making. But to have empathy to understand that people are broken where they've come from. The reason why so many people fall into addiction is because they're broken. So it's for Christians to have empathy. And then for the non-believer, it's my wrestle with God and my wrestling with these ideas. And the biggest takeaway to them, I would say, God is not religion, because I was confusing those two till the cows came home. And I would see, you know, as they say, sometimes the only Bible you will read is a Christian in front of you. And good Lord, including myself, you know, some of the things I say on Twitter, I'm like, I shouldn't speak this way. I should speak with more grace, you know? And
I'm more chief guilty of that sin than anybody else. Carrie, we're out of time. Congratulations on getting the story told, Motorhome Prophecies. Order it from your favorite book supplier. Go and get it. And then use it to encourage other people.
Ready or not, we'll be right back. Serving it up with a no-drink minimum. It's that Kevin Show.
There's something very raw about two heartfelt voices and an old broken-down piano. Here's David Crowder and Torrin Wells.
I've been held by the Savior. Felt fire from above. I've been down to that river, and I ain't the same. A prodigal return. Yesterday's gone. Jesus.